Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome, dear listeners, to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. I'm Malcolm Blackwood, your host and storyteller. And you know where I'm from? We don't do bedtime stories. So, if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well, then I've got just the thing. So, get comfortable, settle in, turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Besides, who needs sleep anyway? Good evening, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. I'm your host, Malcolm Blackwood, and tonight we're venturing into a world where reality itself bends and cracks, where the familiar becomes foreign, and what we think we know about ourselves, our homes, even our world, comes undone. This week, we feature not one, but four sinister stories from acclaimed author L.P. Hernandez, presented courtesy of our friends at Velox Books. Each tale comes from his collection, Dreadful, Tales of the Dead and Dying, now available on Amazon in Kindle, paperback, hardcover, and audiobook formats. In Dreadful, Hernandez explores the haunted worlds and haunted souls, astronauts stranded on dead planets, children with impossible companions, men pursued by doubles, and unwelcome guests with appetites too large to ignore. Critics call his stories gritty, cinematic, and impossible to put down. One reviewer wrote, L.P. Hernandez ranks with the greats of horror. His disturbing imagery will invade your waking thoughts and haunt your dreams. So, if tonight's journey leaves you hungry for more, don't hesitate to grab a copy for yourself or for that unlucky friend you want to keep up at night. Again, that's Dreadful, Tales of the Dead and Dying, available right now on Amazon. Now, if you're ready, let's dim the lights, settle in, and step together into the first of tonight's frightful tales. Before we begin, a reminder, this episode is made possible by our supporters in the Patrons area. If you'd like to enjoy ad-free versions of this show, along with early access and exclusive bonus tales, you can join us for as little as $7.99 a month, or less if you sign up annually. Your support helps us keep producing the spine-chilling content you crave. Sign up today at simplyscarypodcast.com or chillingtalesfordarknights.com. Our first story this evening begins with a man confronting the impossible. His reflection isn't his own, but something older, darker, and determined to take his place. Is he glimpsing another world, or the inevitable end of his own? Written by L.P. Hernandez and performed by yours truly, Malcolm Blackwood, I present to you The Tattooed Man. It sometimes feels like I am stalking a ghost. I have tried and failed to describe the sensation another way. It is vaporous, a separation of the soul from the skin. I walk through the aisles of a store, pause to look at an item. Though I am stationary, it feels as if some part of me keeps walking. I approach a stoplight and witness a flash image of my car speeding into the intersection. A crash and the sound of contorting metal. I do not see this, nor do I hear it, but it happens. I know it, somewhere deeper than sight or hearing. It's as if there are thousands of lives being lived beneath mine, almost in harmony, but not quite. Thousands of threads of possibility, but only one rope. They're only ever evident in wisps and whispers, almost felt, almost seen. Wondering about the phenomenon led me to theories about the multiverse, in which we exist in parallel form in another dimension, perhaps in infinite dimensions. Maybe your life is so in sync with these others that there is nothing to separate you from them. You are the same. If there is any merit to the theory, I was out of sync with at least one aspect of myself, and he was becoming very real to me. Friday. The work day was done, and I walked toward the parking lot along the sidewalk straddling the clinic. A glint of sunlight on aluminum caught my eye. I jogged into the grass to retrieve the can and turned to see my precise physical form, a doppelganger, marching along the path I had just abandoned. The same baby blue scrubs and black Nikes that squeaked on certain surfaces. The vision persisted for a few seconds before I, or he, evaporated. It was me, from the close to the gate, I have no doubt. That was not the beginning, but for the first time, the sensation was accompanied by an apparition. I saw it. Had he or I been walking over tile, I might have heard it as well. My wife and daughter left to visit family in California and help my mother-in-law move to a new city. The house felt more empty. It felt purged. The warmth and peace departing with the last traces of my wife's perfume. With my two leading ladies gone, I felt directionless. Our normal routines broken. I meandered, turning on lights in every room. I wandered through my home like an intruder, as if the carpet that bore dozens of my footprints was undiscovered terrain. As I walked, I continually felt something pass through me, tearing away like an exhalation that my brain registered but that my body did not feel. I stood still in the hallway, goosebumps rippling along my arms, and at once felt both compelled to move in a certain direction and that some part of me, an essence, if the word is acceptable, already did. This cycle repeated irregularly until I recognized the low rumbling I'd heard for the better part of an hour was coming from my stomach. I never eat at the dining room table. Since the birth of my daughter, it has become both an activity center and a repository for cloth diapers. I did that evening, however, and spoke briefly with my wife. She was doing well in California, but was, thankfully, exhausted. Had the conversation endured longer than 5 minutes, she would have seen through the veneer of my pleasantries and asked questions I could not answer. After the meal, I loaded the dishes and turned to walk into the living room. I saw myself, a flicker of myself, follow my intended path, though half a step quicker. I stopped so suddenly I nearly tripped over the carpet and watched the blurry apparition ease into my recliner. Or was it his recliner? The vision was frayed along its edges, while the center mass appeared solid. It was like a man-sized hummingbird. I squinted, and my head ached from the effort, but I could not see his face. Within a few seconds, he blipped out of existence, and I was again alone. When I sat in the recliner, I did not feel the opposite of the tearing away sensation. But I did feel something. I had seen him twice in one day, but I knew he had been near me much longer. At about midnight, I stood before the mirror in the master bedroom. I was tired and it showed. The whites of my eyes were still white, though thin red threads spread toward the pupils. I massaged the fleshy pouches perched atop my cheekbones. My daughter inherited this trait from me, further exaggerated by her milky complexion, which is several shades lighter than mine. "You've got plums under your eyes," I would say. Sometimes she laughed. Sometimes she screamed and cried until the sleep she swore she did not need overwhelmed her small body. I stared at my reflection, smiled, and waved. I frowned. I tried to pull my lower lip over my chin, flared my nostrils, and practiced arching my eyebrows independently. I do a lot of strange things when I am unattended. I swiped a little skin flake free from my cheek, and the version of me in the mirror did as well, with the wrong hand. My mind went blank, synapses going dark, until realization struck me. I yelped in surprise, blood feeling like mud in my veins. There was no one in the bathroom with me, but I was also not alone. I waved, and he waved. Wrong hand again. A ghost of a smile tugging the corners of his mouth. He was dressed in my clothing, or his, depending on perspective. Our forms overlapped, like I was standing within a hologram of myself. The borders of our shared body were hazy, as if the skin were made of smoke. He leaned forward, separating himself from me, and breathed onto the mirror. A small cloud of condensation formed there. He pressed a fingertip to the mirror, and I scrawled, "I see you," then added a crude smiley face beneath the letters. Within seconds, only the smudges of his handiwork remained as the cloud shrank. I saw in his face my black, unruly eyebrows that would unite above the bridge of the nose if not properly groomed. I saw my almond-shaped eyes and a fine, pale scar high atop the right cheekbone. I saw myself in every detail. There were many things happening around and within my body, none of which I could control. I felt pushed and pulled, strangely right when we were unified as one, and wrong when our bodies were incongruous. The entire vision faded, and I was again alone. The sensation of rightness when we were together was so strong that I forgot to be afraid and was, instead, curious. This other seemed to have lived nearly the same life as me. I knew this because we shared the same space, the same house. Based on my vision outside the clinic, we had the same job. We had the same hairstyle. We were the same down to the scars. I stood taller before the mirror, a little more at peace with the situation. I turned on the faucet and cupped my hands to receive the water. It tasted faintly of metal in a way that made me thirstier. In the mirror, he was naked, his flesh discolored by tattoos beginning at his clavicle. I had 3 tattoos, not nearly as many, and I was still clothed at the moment. I recognized the difference in our bodies after the fact. In the moment, my attention was on the goat's head placed atop his own. It nearly grazed the ceiling. The eyes were as dead as marbles, lips slightly parted to reveal a rubbery purple tongue. Its coat was black, and 2 yellowed horns emerged from the top of its skull and curved out of sight. He waved his hand back and forth in the mirror, slow, deliberate, and then he was gone. Sleep did not elude me that night, because it did not come at all. I had questions, and only my reservoir of knowledge to offer answers. I was also aware that I might have experienced something unique to the world, and there might not be any answers. What was he trying to communicate with that stunt in the mirror? I understood the visual. As a teenager and young man, I read many books on the occult, never practicing, but ravenous for information. It was so different from what I thought I knew of the world. I felt I could not learn enough about it, and so I read indiscriminately about it. I did not have a goat's head stored in a closet in my house, though I did still have a few occult books, so in that way, in addition to the tattoos, our realities were different. What I couldn't decide, as I lay in bed, alternating between huddling beneath the comforter and staring at the ceiling, was whether the gesture was meant to frighten or intended as a joke. I scrambled out of bed the next morning, annoyed at the intensity of sunlight pouring into my bedroom. Night thoughts followed me into the hall as I retrieved a battered grimoire from the bookshelf, its tan leather cover soft and supple with age rather than hard and dry. I flipped through it somewhat absent-mindedly, hoping a keyword would leap off the page. But no word described my situation. The letters quivered in and out of focus. In my mind, he waved to me with one hand while he secured the goat's head with the other. After another blessedly short phone call with my wife, I was again alone, encroached upon by a wandering imagination. As it wandered, it returned again and again to the same possibility. Mental illness runs on my mother's side, and it rears its head as a dragon. However, mental illness doesn't manifest all at once, barring some intensely stressful event. For her brother, it was Army basic training. Within a year of his diagnosis, my uncle was so paranoid he thought his nurse was a Nazi spy sent to recruit him. So delusional, he believed the rust on the refrigerator door was blood and that it was his duty to put the appliance down humanely. Thankfully, I dodged that bullet. We've all experienced it in our lives, the visions of different paths we might have taken. Usually, these thoughts pertain to meaningful things like, what if I had married my high school sweetheart instead of the girl from the bar? Sometimes, the sad state of our current path makes the alternative seem better simply because it is unknown. My questions were less important. What if I turned left instead of right? What if I bought this instead of that? I was attracted to these seemingly inconsequential possibilities. Was it because some other version of me had turned left in his world? Had we always been so connected, and I was only just becoming aware? I thought about him and the goat head. What was his world like? Similar to mine, yes, but not the same. Perhaps in his reality, he did more than just read about the occult. I did not commit his tattoos to memory, not with the goat head demanding my attention, but I wondered if the answer was hidden within them. The remote was in my hand, TV on, but I wasn't paying attention. You've got plums under your eyes. Funny, I said the same thing to my daughter. Maybe I learned it from the TV show. Was he sitting in his own version of the same recliner, wondering about me? Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed the Christmas-themed family portrait no longer adorned the living room wall, and in its place was a movie poster for the film The Bunny Game. I was quite certain I'd never heard of it. A quick Google search confirmed that it was not the type of movie I would watch. Not at that stage of my life, anyway. As well, my daughter's toys no longer cluttered the floor. I intended to pile them in her room that afternoon, clear the floor space for my boxing workout, but it was already clear. As soon as I realized I was looking at his reality, I returned to my own. What brought him into our world, or brought our worlds together? Much of my thought energy was directed at him. Had I willed his reality to reveal itself? For the rest of the afternoon and into the evening, I concentrated my thoughts. I replayed our initial interaction in the bathroom, imagining I was there in his reality. For a few seconds, and once for a full minute, I could see his version of my house. I could also affect his reality. I opened doors and cabinets. I drank one of his Dr. Peppers and left a note that said, "I owe you," on his refrigerator. By and large, everything was the same, but there were no crude drawings of cats on his refrigerator. Just my note and a few random magnets, meaning he did not have a daughter. I considered getting a cat while the girls were away. There were plenty of strays in the neighborhood that could be coaxed with a bit of deli meat. My daughter would be so surprised, I would even let her name it. Mostly, I just wandered. Never outdoors. couldn't risk a friend or neighbor seeing me and trying to make conversation. I also thought to search for the goat head, though recalling it perched on his shoulders made my intestines dance. I swallowed, tongue like sandpaper. Why did he have that goat head anyway? As the sun began to set, I realized I had not eaten at any point during the day. I drove on autopilot, barely aware of my surroundings, and returned home with an infant-sized burrito tucked under my arm. The door was slightly ajar, and at that, I was not immediately alarmed. I've been known to leave it open, and my mind had been on other things. Naked pictures of my wife, taken during our year-long courtship, were spread across the dining room table. They had been stowed in a shoebox at the very back of our walk-in closet, beneath three other shoeboxes. A trail of salt on the table displayed the following: I can move things too. As before, I was left to ponder the intent behind the message. My belly twisted painfully, like trying to wring the last bit of water from a washcloth. My discomfort, hovering near fear, was not at the pictures, but at the effort it required to find them. I was able to will myself into his world for seconds and never more than a minute. The pictures were not supposed to be found by an intruder, and then our daughter, once she learned to walk. If she were anything like me, she would use every effort of stealth and deception to find Christmas gifts before Santa got around to wrapping them. But the other me found them, which suggested two possibilities at play. Either he already knew where the pictures were stored, or he was able to exist longer in my reality than I was in his. She looked so young in the pictures, younger than I even remembered from that time in our lives. So timid, it was like looking at another person. I don't know why I kept them around. I knew her body as well as my own. Any sexual spark left in the old images was gone. Still, I returned the pictures to the box and scaled the ladder to the attic. There was an old chest I inherited from my grandmother when she passed away. I stored my valuable comics within it, just a few. It was mostly empty space. Although there was a lock, it was rarely secured. I placed the pictures inside the chest and locked it. I took a step toward the ladder, stopped, and returned to the lock. I changed the combination to my daughter's birthday, May 13th, 2016. Since he didn't have a daughter, he wouldn't know it.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250, and I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At around noon on Sunday, I called my supervisor and requested the rest of the week off.
The rest of the week? Okay, I think we can manage, she said,
the sound of keys click-clacking in the background, indicating she was not paying much attention. You're not upset? It's short notice. She sighed, the keyboard at rest.
Jason, this is the...
What? 10th time you've called me asking for the week off?
It's just... expected, is all.
What do you mean, 10th time? I scratched behind my ear, struggling to recall the last time I had taken a week off, my face burning with guilt.
Never mind. It's nice chatting with you.
I just need to sort some things out, I said.
Good, Jason. Call me if you need more time.
After hanging up, I sat in the recliner and stared at the dead TV, trying to direct my thoughts away from him, because I could not understand his intentions. Was it possible that the pictures were just a joke? Perhaps he was as interested in me as I was in him. The fact that I was married with a child was the most obvious difference between us, So, it is understandable that he would at least be curious. Trying not to think about him, inevitably concentrated my thoughts there. My upbringing was fractured, for lack of a better term. From a young age, I knew I wanted to break the cycle, and so having a family was a goal before I even had a girlfriend. Maybe he wanted something different. Still, I could not help but feel that a stranger found something meant for no other man's eyes. I attempted to connect to him on a subconscious level, guided by intuition rather than thought. I listened to the internal whispers I heard all my life, the spectral suggestions offering alternative paths not far from my own. I left the house, got into the car, and started driving. If I was inspired to take a left, I took it. If instinct demanded I turn right, I did that as well. The voice never rose above a whisper, but I heard it. I paid little attention to the streets or landmarks around me and suddenly found myself idling in the parking lot of a city park. There was a slight chill in the air, even in the early afternoon, but the sun basked in a cloudless sky and the park was teeming with people. Two children, dressed as if winter had already arrived in their blue and red parkas, took turns sprinting, bound to the colorful kite that was a twirling green diamond high over their heads. Their father alternated between cheering them on and, I assume, checking football scores on his cell phone. He pumped his fist and then turned his attention fully to the screaming children. My instinct told me to remain in place. Joggers, mostly women, trotted past, bound for the thickets of trees to the north and south sides of the parking lot. After about 20 minutes, they would appear opposite the vast field of grass, heading in the reverse direction. My wife and I had taken our daughter here a few times. If I remember correctly, it was a roughly 3-mile circuit, mostly paved. A woman, flame-haired and dressed for August in shorts that could double as underwear, approached the parking lot for a second lap around the park, and I suddenly felt nervous and voyeuristic. Was the other me squirming in his seat, in his reality? A grown man sitting in a parked car watching children play? Not a good look. I accessed my phone and play-acted a conversation that could not be sufficiently expressed with words alone. The jogger looked in my direction for a moment that went beyond casual interest. Recognition? Disgust? She whipped her ponytail over her shoulder and resumed her trek. Faster, I think, as if she were running away from me. My stomach lurched. I turned the volume of the whisper to mute and left him at the park. My experiment was just a guess then, but I assumed it was safe to inject myself into his world. I liken this exercise to finding a television signal with rabbit ears. An inch or two in the wrong direction offered only snow and static. With a steady hand and patience, though. Instead of aluminum foil and a hanger, I used my mind. Within 30 seconds, I was inside his living space looking for something. But I didn't know what that something might be. What would cast light on his shrouded intentions? His possessions largely mirrored my own. We supported the same teams based on his collection of coffee mugs. If I didn't know better, I would have thought I was in my own home. Even the refrigerator was stocked with my food. Still, I felt my ego rebelling against the idea that there was another, in this dimension or any other, who was basically the same as me. I was neither rich nor famous, but the idea that I was also not unique was like a kick in the shins. I grasped the doorknob to my daughter's bedroom. The rest of the house was so similar to mine that I only knew this was not true by the buzzing, fluttering sensation of existing in his space. The difference, then, was beyond the door. Unless he stored the goat head in the attic, it was most likely only a few feet from me. Surrounded by what? A mystery for another time. There was a thin, battered notebook on the nightstand in his bedroom. something I might have bought for myself but had not. As I felt his reality pull away from me, I snatched it and held onto it as much with my mind as with my hands. I stood in my bedroom next to my nightstand. The notebook was still in my hands. It was an unexpected development. Not only could I interact with his reality, I could take it with me. I sat in the recliner. The bunny game poster was on the wall instead of the family portrait. Our realities were blending outside of my control or desire. I would have preferred poems about a rainbow trapped within morning dew upon a blade of grass. What I found was another puzzle. It was written in my script, forcefully scrawled as if he'd had the same third-grade teacher mock him for his gentle touch. Mine had said, "Are you afraid to hurt the paper?" Perhaps his said something nastier, because the words were carved into each page. I could read them with my fingers just as well as my eyes, but I could make sense of none of it. There were dates and abbreviations, including one for that park, I presumed. I approached the threshold of understanding, but did not cross it. The notebook no longer seemed like a harmless memento, but something that should be burned. I suddenly felt as if I could sense him moving through his space, finding the nightstand bare, the notebook gone, knowing I had taken it from him. The next evening, Tuesday, or was it Wednesday, I found myself in an unfamiliar neighborhood. It was dusk, almost dark. Porch lights flared like fireflies. I checked my cell phone. Damn, too late. My daughter would have been asleep by then. No missed calls from the wife, and I'm sure I would hear about it later. What are you doing out here? It was a nicer neighborhood than mine. Two-story houses with ornate columns that likely bore no weight. I followed him out here, I guessed. His notebook was on the passenger seat. I thought I had brought it inside the house and hid it under mail in the kitchen junk drawer. Later that night, just after 3, according to my cell phone, I woke as if an alarm had gone off. The street light that usually washed my room in a sherbet glow was extinguished. Instead, long blue-black shadows stretched across the comforter. I blinked, willing my eyes to adjust to the darkness, wondering why I was awake. A breeze trickled through the partially cracked window. There was an abrupt and familiar creak, one I recognized from the months my wife would spend the wee hours of the night rocking our daughter back to sleep. The chair had been a pet project for her, a castaway she rescued from a neighbor's driveway on garbage day. Years later, its condition was not much improved. But my wife was gone. The chair groaned again, and my pulse began to quicken. The sound of blood flooding my brain lent a dull edge to all other noises. I swear I saw her there, rocking in the dark, as she had those late nights and early mornings. It became easy to pass into his reality for minutes at a time. I only had to imagine I was there, and there I would be. What was difficult was separating our realities. I sensed him around me all the time, like how you feel the presence of a dog after it has passed, dusting your ankles with its fur. I avoided the mirror in the bathroom, fearing I wouldn't recognize the eyes reflected back at me. My wife did not contact me on Thursday or Friday. Still upset I missed our regular call earlier in the week, I suppose. I called her to apologize, but the house phone rang at the same time, and I hung up before she could answer or I could leave a message. When I picked up the house phone, there was no one on the line. I had a strange feeling. It originated in the center of my gut. What if he called me? Was it even possible? I believe it was 3 or 4 days that passed. A cool rain settled in, reminding me of Thanksgiving and the holidays to come. And I found my wife and daughter's absence, both lonesome and detached. I missed them terribly, but it began to feel as if they had been gone far longer than 2 weeks. It was so difficult to tear my reality away from his. I became accustomed to the Bunny Game movie poster in place of our family portrait. I actually rented the movie, and though disturbed, I did finish it. Sometimes I walked into my daughter's bedroom just to smell her, the sweet, milky odor of her linen. Instead, I found the goat head on a table, with puddles of melted black wax to either side of it. I did not linger. Transitioning between realities no longer required my intent. I didn't know what to do with this knowledge, so I just sat in my recliner, my nails burrowed into the fabric as I tried to anchor myself. I willed the movie poster to change, and eventually it did. After several days of no contact, she answered. My wife knew something was different about me. I was distracted, hurried, and polite in an effort to compensate for my fear. It sounds like you're smiling, she said. I am. You only smile when you're hiding something, dear. This was true, and my tongue wilted while searching for a response. I developed a snaggletooth around the age of 11 and had shielded my smile behind my hand ever since. I proposed the idea of adopting a cat, redirecting the conversation, which collapsed into single-word responses and then grunts. I was attempting to convince my wife to get on board with adopting a cat. I hated cats. The idea of them, at least. The conversation ended on an awkward note, with forced laughter on my behalf, smiling and hiding it, though I was alone in the room. We followed a drunk woman into the parking lot of a nightclub. The curiosity was becoming something more like a compulsion, like there was some thread connecting us, or a tether, more precisely. Where he went, I followed. Sometimes we arrived there together. I wondered if our environments were the same. Was he following this woman, legs with competing agendas, humming jukebox songs off key? Or was he simply walking through a parking lot and she only existed in my reality? Regardless, I was not the type of man who would take advantage of a drunk woman. I hoped he wasn't either. I peeled myself away from him, from her, and drove home. I dreamed of him that night, a common occurrence since the mirror. The woman from the nightclub was with me, I think. I had only seen her from behind. In the dream haze, it was unclear if she wanted to be. The next morning, I woke with the taste of vomit in my mouth, watery snapshots of the dream, which became a nightmare, floating like a mirage in front of my eyes. I held my cell phone, heart like a hornet's nest. I couldn't tell my wife about this, about any of it. Hello, Jason, my boss said, keys click-clacking. Do you need next week off, too? I'm not sure. I'm just having some trouble right now, and I didn't know who to call. I couldn't call my wife because... She sighed, and I could tell her next words were spoken with a hand cupped around the phone's receiver. Jason, do you remember calling me last week? I was at work last week. And the week before that? What do you mean? You haven't worked here in 2 years. I'm sorry. I don't mind you calling me, but you need to know that. Acid shot to the back of my throat. What do you mean I don't work there? Where do I work? Click, clack, click, clack. I don't know. No one ever called for a reference after. I saw you outside the clinic in your scrubs the other day. Sorry I didn't say hello. Management wants you banned from the campus. They say you make people uncomfortable. I told them it wouldn't be a good look. Which reality was I in? In my reality, I definitely had a job. The whole mess started when I left work several days prior. He was there, too. I saw him, the ghost of him, walk down the sidewalk while I picked up the can. I've got to go, I said, and hung up the phone. My daughter's bedroom. That was how I would know which reality I was in. I swung the door open, anticipating the scent of baby powder and clean linens. The goat's head faced the door, its hourglass eyes aimed at mine. Though my heart pounded, this was good news. I was not in my reality. I must have drifted into his during my sleep. I still had a job and a wife and daughter who would due back any day. I left the door to my daughter's bedroom open. When it changed back, I wanted to see it. As I backed away, the pull cord to the attic brushed the top of my head, sending a warm jolt down my spine. What did he keep in the attic? What did he store in Grandma's chest? The lid was open, lock off to the side. The floorboards whined beneath my feet as I shuffled toward it, one misstep away from crashing through drywall. Light filtered through a single porthole window with frosted glass. Yellow afternoon light. I slept through the whole day, but felt as if I'd been awake twice as long. In the feeble glow, I saw the naked form of my wife, her hand playfully blocking the lens so only portions of her torso were visible. Back in my reality again. That was good. Only, there was a glint of metal on her nipple. A piercing. My wife didn't have a piercing below her ears. I plucked a few pictures from the pile. She wasn't smiling in the first picture. She was screaming, head turned to the side, arms hidden behind her body, chest shiny with tears. She wasn't smiling, and she wasn't my wife. Neither were the others. I woke on a Saturday, I believe, and sensed the presence of another form beside me. As a married man of 10 years, this was something to which I was accustomed, but I knew at once it was not right. I grasped the comforter between my thumb and forefinger. I knew he would be there with his goat's head resting on my wife's pillow. He would be otherwise naked except for his tattoos. His eyes were blue, but like a doll's. They stared at the ceiling, unblinking. Vermilion hair pooled across the pillow, which was stained a deeper, muddier shade of red. The mouth was agape, the lips gray, the skin blistered like an overcooked bratwurst. Everything below her chin was that muddy red, the same red caked to my hands. Her body was ruined, something like hope still trapped in her doll eyes. The room smelled like the can of old nails my father kept in the garage. She was the jogger, the one who stared for an extra second before I abandoned the parking lot. I did not leap out of bed, but wriggled slowly, like a snake leaving its skin behind. Was I in his reality or mine? The small notebook on the nightstand, the one I had stolen from him, confirmed this was mine. I looked for my cell phone, knowing I should call the police, but desperate to hear my wife's voice. I didn't know what I would tell her, how I could convince her I had not killed the woman in our bed, the woman who seemed to recognize me at the park. But when I called my wife, the house phone rang and rang and rang. There was a text message from my boss from the day before, likely not long after we spoke. Jason, sorry for being so short. Sometimes easy to forget what you went through. I know how much you wanted to be a dad. I hope you're getting the help you need. I rinsed the blood from my hands in red rivulets that slowly turned pink. My eyes, twin moons, scanned the reflection in the mirror. From the neck down, my flesh was fully masked by tattoos. One, to the left of my heart, was of angel wings. The date below it was May 13th, 2016. A crash, the sound of contorting metal. It was something like a memory, but not quite. It was the memory of a possibility, one that did not happen for me. I traced the tattoo with my fingertips and, as if by magic, it disappeared, and I stared into the eyes of the man I knew. the man I was, a husband and a father. My girls were on the way to California. They would be back any day now.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
That was The Tattooed Man by L.P. Hernandez from his collection Dreadful, Tales of the Dead and Dying. A reminder that the full book, with many more tales like the ones you'll hear tonight, is available now on Amazon in Kindle, audiobook, paperback, and hardcover editions. Our second story takes us to a dinner party unlike any other. A man, in search of acceptance, finds himself at a table where every smile hides a knife, and every toast carries a warning he may not live to heed. Written by L.P. Hernandez and performed by yours truly, I present The Invitation. I don't know why I believed the man. There was nothing in his speech or dress suggesting credibility beyond what you might expect from any stranger. It revealed more about me than him, I'm sure. I am a particular kind of introvert. I choose my moments. I can charm and do the heavy lifting in a conversation when I seek out these moments, but I rarely seek them. He spoke closely, practically in my ear, as if we were old friends, or as if he wanted no one else to hear. I can picture him wiping his hand along the seam of his pants before he reached for mine to shake it the first time. Each word he spoke was plucked like the petal of a flower from some master script he developed over time. Each word was perfect. I encountered him a second time, and a third, seemingly random, from the checkout at the grocery store to a chain restaurant just before the evening rush. By the fourth time, it was me reaching to shake his hand, and I did so with a smile on my face. Within a month, I agreed to watch a football game at his house, though it was nearer to a mansion. He was knowledgeable about the team and its history. It all felt quite natural. "Tony, is it okay if I call you that?" he said. "Sure. No one calls me Anthony except my mom. I'm having this thing next week. If I were a pretentious man, I would call it a dinner party. It's one of those things I never thought I would have to do in my life that has become a sadly regular occurrence. I would appreciate it if I could have someone normal there." I recognized the decades between us for the first time in the moment of silence that followed the invitation. His gray roots were coming through, eyebrows like lichen. He reminded me of my father, a man with whom I had irregular contact. Maybe he reminded me of a father in general, not mine specifically, or I might have declined the invitation. He was the father I would have wanted. "Of course," I said, smiling without having to think about it. We both turned our attention back to the game. My memory of the evening is fuzzy, or spotty more precisely. I have very clear memories, but there are gaps in the timeline. I do recall meeting him at the door and being directed to an upstairs bedroom. I found a tuxedo on the bed next to an open bottle of beer chilling in a bucket of ice. I had never worn a tuxedo before, and he may have guessed this about me because the bow tie was a clip-on. Thankfully, there was no cummerbund, as I might have needed assistance. I sipped the beer as I undressed, my anxiety manifesting as sweat on my brow and prickling along my arms. Jazz trickled beneath the door, trumpet burps that seemed random to me. I had not been in that room before, had seen very little of the house beyond the living room and kitchen, and had always been supervised, likely a second or third guest bedroom. It was still larger and more extravagantly furnished than my master bedroom. It was the kind of furniture you asked permission before you sat on it. I was not intimidated by his money because of our friendship, brief though it may have been. I did not know if I would feel the same around his friends. I sat on the bed, without asking permission first, and admired my new shoes, glossy even in the dim light of a single lamp. I flipped through a Rolodex of anecdotes I might need to offer, none suitable to be shared with jazz in the background. I murmured a joke for practice and then pitched forward to the floor, the empty bottle of beer still clutched in my hand. A single pang of guilt radiated in the pit of my stomach as the beer soaked into the rug. I cannot describe what it felt like inside my head when I opened my eyes. Too much of my body demanded too much of my attention. Pain registered, sparkling here and there like lightning. It was like the memory of trauma rather than something new. I blinked repeatedly as I did not feel in control of any other muscles. The music had an underwater quality to it, but I had to hold on to something. No longer jazz, the rhythm of the song was familiar, distantly so. There was another sound on top of the music, repetitive. My ears couldn't make sense of it. I willed my fingers to clear my ears, which felt plugged. Pain and helplessness. I tried to anchor myself in the music, but it slipped away. I might have fallen asleep. This is one of those gaps I mentioned. I woke to the sight of soup in a porcelain bowl. The music was a song by Bob Dylan's Sons Band. The lyrics floated inside my head, competing for attention amidst the muffled chaos. "Tony, are you awake?" By the rhythm of the words, I believe that sentence was the repetitive sound resting on top of the music. I lifted my head, which felt five times its normal weight, and gazed in the direction of the voice. He rose from his position at the head of the table, dabbing the corners of his mouth with the napkin and smoothing the wrinkles in his tuxedo. Soon he was beside me, his arm draped across my shoulders. "Tony, this is a dinner party. Please eat with your right hand. Keep your left in your lap, out of sight." There was something in his voice on the verge of disappointment, possibly embarrassment. How long had I been sitting there staring at my soup? How regretful must he feel to have invited me? I nodded my head and hoisted my arm onto the table, fumbling numbly for the spoon to the right of the collection of forks. It took a full minute to summon the dexterity necessary to secure the spoon between my thumb and forefinger. A minute later, I cursed myself as my hand submerged in the soup in a stone-fisted attempt to feed myself. The broth ran along the inside of my sleeve to my elbow. My head drooped beneath his scrutiny. Me and Cinderella. The evening and, presumably, night played out in similar fashion. I implored my right hand to behave, and it rebelled at every turn. I fingered the mashed potatoes. I flicked asparagus across the table. Every few minutes, he would leave his seat, dabbing the corners of his mouth, and whisper in my ear. A suggestion. A velvety admonishment that gave me hope until the next faux pas. Once, I awoke and found I was dancing. Sort of. I was propped up by someone behind me, vice-like hands jammed into my armpits. In front of me was a woman, my dance partner. Her makeup was severe enough to pull me out of the fog momentarily. "Aren't you going to introduce yourself?" she said, lips bright red like a boxing glove. I tried to form the simple letters of my name, but could not. There were tears in her eyes, mascara running down one cheek. "Cat got your tongue?" "I'm..." Asleep, again. I might have engaged further, but I created no memory of it. I recalled a voice in my ear as I sat at the dinner table again, with no recollection of how I came there. "That was my wife, Tony, and you can't even introduce yourself? You are trash, Tony. You are unforgivable." The pain intensified as the evening progressed. It was in my lap, unseen, throbbing in my mouth. The 90s rock song played on a loop, loud enough I could make out the words, but soft enough to forget it. I passed in and out of wakefulness, often failing to recognize that I had fallen asleep until the tip of my nose touched gravy. Upon rousing, I would smile and nod to various points of the room, to smudges that might have been faces. He left his place at the head of the table to repeatedly chastise me for my faux pas. He whisper-shouted into my ear, "Now you want to be quiet? Why are you here, Tony? What are you doing here? You're such a good talker, aren't you?" I opened my mouth to reply, and a thick bubble burst on my lips. "Look what you've done." There was wine on the floor, between my feet. I tried to form the word sorry, but only spat on the floor. Minutes later, maybe an hour, I blinked back to reality. "Now, Tony, when the host calls for the toast, you will lift your wine glass with your right hand, drink all of its contents, then proceed on to the dessert." I nodded my head, crusted gravy flaking off my nose and cheeks. I could do this. I could save the evening. The toast came soon after, and I obeyed his directive as well as I could manage. Initially, I spilled a bit of wine, but managed to drink most of it. It burned in my mouth, enough to make my eyes water. I reached for the small fork to the left of the cake and found that I had misjudged the distance. I reached again and failed once more. I cried, eyeing the empty wine glass as waves of unnatural warmth radiated from my chest. "You can't hold a fork, Tony. You can't hold anything, can you?" I peeled back the sleeve of my tuxedo coat, revealing crossed lines of stitches at the end of my wrist. I screamed, and a gush of blood, not wine, splattered onto the cake. My head smacked the table, neck sagging like soft leather. I woke in my own bed 2 days later, sunlight like needles burrowing through my eyes into my brain. I reached an arm up to block it, but instead of a hand, there was a clot of crusted bandages. A cascade of memories sliced through the fading fugue, a mix of insults and questions, music and pain. The skin was pink and purple around the haphazard train tracks, pus leaking through a stitch. I sat upright, and something slid off my chest. I reached for it with the stump before switching to the right hand. The picture was of my host, some 15 or so years younger. By his side was a girl of around 20 years old. I knew her at once. I remembered her favorite band had been the Wallflowers. I lied and told her they were my favorite too. I lied a lot that night. I remembered her shifting her weight beneath me, no longer struggling as my hand pinned her to the mattress. I remembered hearing she dropped out of college soon after. She never went to the police. To me, that meant there had been no crime. I heard about the suicide from a friend. I spent the last 15 years trying to forget her and that night. The pain in my stump was like a small fire, pulsing with the beat of my heart. The pain in my mouth persisted despite whatever drug or sedative remained in my system. Although she never told the police, she must have confided in her father. I knew nothing about the man, not even a last name, as I never learned it. If I went back to the house, he would not be there. Of that, I had no doubt. It was planned so perfectly. The chance encounters, The dinner party meant only for me. He had 15 years after all. My stump began to itch. I had forgotten her, and now I would remember her every minute of my life. That was The Invitation by L.P. Hernandez. If you've ever sat down at a table where you weren't sure if you belonged, perhaps you'll think twice the next time an envelope arrives with your name on it. And remember, tonight's tales all come from Hernandez's collection, Dreadful, Tales of the Dead and Dying, courtesy of Velox Books. If you're enjoying these stories, you owe it to yourself to pick up the full book and lose a little more sleep. If tonight's episode unsettled you, doppelgangers in the glass, dinner guests who won't let you leave, astronauts abandoned to silence, and children whispering to things that shouldn't exist, there's more waiting in the patrons area. There you'll find extended ad-free editions of this program, plus exclusive tales you won't hear anywhere else. Membership is just $7.99 a month, or even less with an annual plan. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons, or head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to become a member today. Support indie horror and step deeper into the dark. Thank you so much for keeping the nightmares alive. And so, dear listeners, we conclude another evening of dark imaginings. Tonight, we've walked with doubles, dined with devils, drifted alone among the stars, and tucked in children who weren't alone in their rooms. Together, they remind us the most frightening things are not the monsters we make up, but the ones that refuse to stay imaginary. Our thanks again to L.P. Hernandez for tonight's stories from his collection, Dreadful, Tales of the Dead and Dying, published by Velox Books and available right now in Kindle, paperback, hardcover, and audiobook formats on Amazon. Don't miss your chance to hold the whole collection in your hands or let it whisper to you from your nightstand. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, please take a moment to subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on YouTube, ring the bell for notifications, and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X for updates. Share tonight's stories with a friend and let us know which one left you sleeping with the lights on. Until next time, this is Malcolm Blackwood thanking you for listening and reminding you, sometimes the scariest stories are the ones we tell ourselves in the dark. Sleep well, listeners, if you can. Thank you for listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Malcolm Blackwood. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of the respective authors. Original music provided by Eric Peabody, host and narrator of the Horror Hill podcast. Sound design, mixing, and mastering provided by Aaron Sawicki. Program artwork and logo by Craig Groshek. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? Well, I take submissions. Email it to me today at malcolm@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's malcolm@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, Subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook, Instagram, and X, formerly Twitter, to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Sunday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button and tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or request. Don't forget to visit us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Sunday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.